rendez-vous à québec.ca/infirmière. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
All right. Directions on how to use your radio. Find the power button. Turn it to on. Turn the knob to CKUT 90.3 FM. Relax and enjoy.
CKUT 90.3 FM, Montreal.
Welcome to this episode of Pirate Block Radio here at CKUT 90.3 FM. Leading you through the next hour is me, Malte Leander. We have quite the special episode lined up for you today, as I'm currently seated in a studio a few hours west of Montreal in Gatineau, Quebec. Before jumping into the juicy details, I would like to begin by acknowledging that the land on which we gather is the traditional unceded territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe people. The Algonquin peoples have lived on this land since time immemorial. We are grateful to have the opportunity to be present in this territory. I am also grateful for the invitation to come here to the studio belonging to the artist-run center, Damon. I've been fortunate to create a collaboration, an exchange together with them, being invited to be part of their interdisciplinary month-long radio event with both outdoor concerts and a diffusion of radio content showcasing the broad and wide extent of art and culture from the region. Last month's episode of Pirate Block Radio was airing as part of the lineup. Collection of So my first guest of the day is Marc-Alexandre Reinhardt, an artist approaching topics such as historicity, translation, and collective agency through his research creation projects within the areas of sound, installation, and performance. It's a pleasure to have you here, Marc-Alexandre.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
So I had in mind that we are going to reflect a bit generally on the importance of space in today's conversations. Which is something that you touch upon in your own manner as well, exploring the links between language with location and architecture in some of your projects. Can you walk us through a little bit on how the concept of space is of value to you in your work?
Yeah, well, space is central because I really think that sound is, you know, relational. First and foremost, and being a sound-based artist, I'm always working in a particular space in which these relations can appear, right? My work is usually really context-based, so I work in situ a lot. Working with the resonances of particular resonant spaces, resonant frequencies, and also how, you know, history resonates within certain spaces. Though space can be very physical, but it's also, the way we inhabit, which is also historical. So for me, space has, you know, different values. Mm-hmm. It's sound being deeply relational, and relations have to be develop in space. Sound travels in space and reflects in spaces. Sound has many meanings in relationship to space.
Sure, and the physical spaces are, you know, historically connected to the different types of architecture, both techniques and traditions, and the way that sound propagates within the acoustic space is an interesting link to the historical value of how that particular space was built at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, I've worked with infrastructures like bridges. Recently, I was I've done a project between Gatineau and Ottawa on the Alexandra Bridge, for instance, where I used like the resonance structure as of the bridge as a a point d'appui, a leverage to raise certain questions that are linked to that particular space, which is, you know, the bridge crossing two different cities. And working on this bridge, you can really see how collectively we inhabit a city, how collectively we circulate within the city. By paying attention to these resonant spaces, we try to, tune ourselves into it, or try to pay more attention to how a very big feature of how we come into relations with each other.
You know? Absolutely.
Another project I worked on recently is a reflux, which is which was a performance I did and an installation based work I did in Gaspésie. At Barachois Institute. I had the opportunity to work with a sewage, like a huge resonant tunnel that goes underneath a highway. The acoustics of that particular space made it a particularly interesting place to work with, mm-hmm. and to engage through also relationships with the community over there. Infrastructures, architecture have all a particular color or a particular tone. And I just like to work with these acoustic characters and try to inhabit these spaces for a certain amount of time. My work is really context based and very experimental. So I like to, you know, to put sound in spaces and see how they react and to respond to that. And that's how the work evolves eventually. And that's how I can, you know, install things that I feel are relevant or can raise questions.
Yeah. For sure. And I think that makes very much sense. It goes hand in hand. I mean, without the space, there is no way for the sound, you know, just physically to travel. So it's very much interlinked.
Yeah.
Another part of your audio work is also including field recording, which, you know, in its own way is a sort of archiving of a particular moment in a particular space or environment. Mm-hmm. How does that part play a role in your process?
Mm-hmm. Well, field recording is a way of producing sound or even just relating to a certain environment. And it's also a way of getting access or to perceptions that we normally don't have access to. And after rendering those or composing those in a way that can touch people or affect people. So field recording is really important in my work because it basically allows me to gather materials or base materials that I construct from or compose from, eventually in studio or either in space or just like spatializing recordings, field recordings, and allowing us to perceive our environment differently. So it's a way of, you know, amplifying certain phenomena or certain, you know, events that are sometimes not perceivable in our daily lives. Mm-hmm. So it's just a way of, you know, framing for field recordings, a way of framing and amplifying certain phenomena and allowing access to them in certain ways.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting too, the archiving of sound being, you know, it's a sort of compressed and limited version of the place or the experience of the natural environment where it is gathered, and also subjective. I mean, it's coming from a point of view, even though it can be thought of as a rendering of a natural space. It's also coming from, you know, the person actually capturing this moment in audio.
Yeah, and you know, and it just, in my fascination with the sounds of the environments, you know, it comes from my past in the noise scene. You know, I started to work with sound, doing noise. I used to play drums in punk bands, and at a certain point, I just turned to doing really DIY recordings with tape recorders and using that as material to produce sound, because, you know, I just realized really quickly that my environment was so much richer than anything I could, you know, belt out of my drums or, you know, my electronics. So I quickly started to work with very minimal elements, what I had, you know, what I was hearing in everyday life, and integrating that in performances. So yeah, I come from a very minimal approach to sound, in which I basically use feedback loops, which is, you know, electricity running through and a circuit, and being audible in different ways, and using, you know, sounds from my immediate environment. So using really kind of basic primary materials to produce compositions or performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm curious to hear a little bit more about some more concrete pieces that you've worked on. I mean, having experience and constantly working with both installation and performance, you're quite familiar with the different sort of spaces that it's fluctuating between, that comes with those categories of art making and exhibition. And to me, when finding some sort of in-between space is where it gets pretty interesting, where it's a combination of the two, which I think you're doing in your sound installation, the fanning, which involves fans and microphones and loudspeakers to create this dynamic and fluctuating environment as opposed to a static installed piece. So with these quasi-random events going through these interactions with these sections of this installation, I find particularly interesting. So yeah, I'm curious to hear if you can talk to us a little bit more about that work.
Yeah, so the fanning is a piece I've been working on for a couple of years now. I had the opportunity to do a residency at Daimun at the beginning of 2021, I think. And the whole idea behind the fanning is looking to compose some form of chorality or some kind of collective utterance or collective voicing between the human voice and non-human voices. And when I say non-human voices, is basically looking at objects, in this case is fans, objects of everyday life that have maybe a certain agency but that are also very programmed. So yeah, the fanning is an installation that uses four fans and recuperated speaker cones that are hung in the space and that react to the movement of the fans. But it's also a feedback system because each fan is mic'd using wireless microphones, and the sound of the oscillations of each fan are picked up by the mics and fed through all the speakers in the space who are also fluctuating because of the movement of the fan.
Right.
So the relationship between the fans and the speakers is somewhat random, and it's creating also a feedback system that's constantly on the threshold of saturating, but it's always in movement, so the feedback loop is constantly being interrupted by the movement of the fans and the speakers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of somewhat of an organism or some kind of meta-stable environment that has a life in its own, which is unpredictable. But
I was about to say it sounds almost like an ecosystem in itself, where you can't really shift one parameter without sort of bulging the whole thing into another direction, or everything really interacts with another.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the fans are based, are basic fans you would use during hot summer days,
right?
So they oscillate at certain speeds, and they have a certain directionality that is programmed. So all fans are somewhat standard. So there's a very predictable element to those objects. But when you put them in relationship to each other and to other objects, this kind of very standardized way of operating becomes suddenly very open.
Right.
Combination
of directionality, of airflow.
Yeah, exactly. Airflows and vibrations and sound pressures and all these phenomena actually open up a system that from the exterior seems pretty closed. So the fanning was the starting point of the fanning, trying to construct compose a chorality of objects that sing together in a certain way. And eventually I wanted to a couple of performers to come try to interact with this system. So mm-hmm. try to tune in to this this feedback system and pay attention to its fluctuations. So either accentuate certain peak moments or try to decelerate certain other motions, or try to
play along with the patterns of
the
installation.
Yeah, because it's first and foremost it's an exercise in listening how the system operates, and see how you can circulate or inhabit the system. So you can inhabit it sometimes by reinforcing the predictability of the patterns, or you can add a chaotic element to it and try to make it more unpredictable. So so human agency comes into relationship to other objects and try to find a way of inhabiting common space for a certain moment in time. So I had Lindsay Wellman come in with a clarinet. Lindsay Wellman is a great experimental musician here based in Ottawa. And he agreed to come in to experiment with the installation. I also had two amateur singers to come in and also try to tune in using, you know, very minimal scores that involve them going through space in certain patterns and, you know, using just vocal incantations in certain ways or vocal drones to tune into the installation. So these are all kind of experience that I was able to do here in Diamond. Eventually, I hope to be able to do, you know, performance or with the installation in some other context.
I think it sounds like a doable idea, the way that you've already presented the interaction with live music or even using the installation as a sort of director or even a score that you're following in real time, which, it sounds like a versatile project that could work in a lot of different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hope. Well, we'll see. You know, we'll see.
Mm. Thanks for sharing all of those ideas on the fanning. I think that we are running out of time for our discussion today, Marc-Alexandre, but thank you for sitting down and shining some light upon a couple of projects and talking to me today.
My pleasure. It's great to meet you.
So our second guest from the range of Daimon members in today's episode of Pirate Block Radio is Christina Bell, who, from what I can tell, juggles a lot of different creative outlets, film and cinema, but also as a vocalist, musician, and perhaps a DIY fashionista, amongst other things. Welcome, Christina. I'll let you continue the introduction there.
Thank you so much. Okay, yes, I am a multidisciplinary artist. But in a zany DIY way. So thanks for picking up on that. My main practices are video and music. However, I did begin to sew over the winter, and I'm wearing, I know you can't see me, but I am wearing something that I created, which is a quilt coat.
Yeah, which looks great, by the way.
Thank you so much. thanks for having me.
So today's topic revolves around space and location in different sections and areas of the creative process. So just as a general first question here, whilst tinkering away on ideas and projects, how do you find that space affects you and the way you work?
Okay, I'm really glad you're asking this because I feel like over the last year and a half or 2 years where we've been like locked down and kind of in our homes and in our neighborhoods, I've been really enjoying just being in hall, which is awesome because there's a lot of like creative, freaky energy here and people who are doing like amazing work. And I find that a lot of what I'm making right now is like really influenced by where I live and who's around. And so I've been really enjoying like both like the natural elements of the neighborhood, the river, the Ottawa River is just right behind where I live. And also the people who are here who are like just really working on their creative projects in really inspiring ways and super eager and helpful to share their knowledge with me. And of course, Daimon, like the space is so amazing because it's right in hall as well. And it's just a 5-minute walk from my house. And they have a lot of really wonderful kind of resources here. So the mix of all those things, plus other things I'm sure we'll talk about, has really shaped this neighborhood for me. And then in turn has like very much shaped what I'm creating right now, because it is all about like what's around and it's really well received in hall, which is cool. You can do anything in hall.
Sounds like a good feedback loop. Getting creative input and then putting that back into the local sort of environment that you're creating within.
Totally.
But, you know, juggling a lot of different things as you're someone that is creating in a variety of mediums, is there parts of the creative process that are better made in different locations, working with, you know, in music and audio or in video? Or how does that play a role when approaching the different type of projects that you're doing?
That's a great question. I actually moved about a year ago into an apartment that I have like the luxury of having a studio space in that I created. So, you know, I have like my piano and my audio setup in that room. And I also have my sewing machine and my cameras. It's a kind of a hectic space, but it's really creative and fun because I've never had that before. I've never had a space in my home that I can work in and have all my gear in one spot. So I actually do most of my work from that location. My upstairs neighbor is also a musician and we collaborate a lot. Her name is Yolande LaRoche and you should check her out as well. And she also has a lot of gear upstairs. I don't know, like I feel like I do a lot of my work at home. So maybe that doesn't answer your question about having different spaces to work on different things. It would be awesome to like kind of tap into different places, but just the circumstances of the last year have been really like, okay, we really got to hone in to like creating our like home space in a way that like allows me to do everything that I want to do. And I've been super lucky to have the space in my apartment to do that and be able to make noise and like live next to musicians who are also making noise and not be afraid to kind of try things out in that space. So that's been really like a blessing and actually has really fed all of my practices a lot to be able to just like kind of wake up and jump in if I want to.
Understandably so.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I think that that links very much to the question of having a space within the space, because that's not always obvious, especially in a medium such as sound, when you're sort of being very self-conscious on how much how much space you're taking up with the noise or the music that you are doing. So being next to someone else that understands that way of living and expressing yourself, I think affects that way of living and being able to practice a lot.
Totally. And it goes both ways too. Like it also has like, I've also been able to grow my confidence being like, okay, this is my time to sit and practice. And like, there are people around who know that this is where I work. So if I'm not practicing, like I'm kind of accountable to them too, because you know, it could be like a week where you're not working on something and you're like, oh shoot, I feel self-conscious because everyone that knows that I care about this knows that I'm not working on it.
Why is it completely silent in Christina's apartment?
Yeah, exactly. They're like, okay, she's watching TV or something, like, you know.
But you're not only working in sound as a filmmaker or working with video. You're also very much, you know, curating and creating a constructed space, whether it be working with props and decoration and lighting and everyone else in the aesthetic category, or just by the angle of the camera itself and deciding what to catch on film before hitting the record button. What do you find interesting about space in this context when shooting video?
That's a really good question. I mean, I am new to filmmaking. So I wrote a film with my friend Alix in the winter, and we shot it with also some local actors, which
Great.
Is awesome. Also at my apartment, I have to say. I know it's like...
Everything is going down in there.
I'm really taking advantage of my space. But yeah, it's really cool to be in control of like what's happening in terms of ensuring that you're going to... You know, over the winter when we were shooting this, I lived in my apartment by myself. So I really like was able to really transform the space. Like we transformed my basement into like a kind of spooky, like it's a horror movie.
Oh,
I can't
okay.
wait for you. I hope you guys will see it. It's coming out soon. And so because we had to, have some horror elements, there was like a lot of set design that we did in my basement and in my apartment that was really like chill because I live there alone and I have the space. I lived there alone at the time. And thinking about space in that way, I mean, I really, in all my practices, like to work with what I have, and I'm not someone who's like, okay, I'm going to build this world. I kind of am inspired by like what I see and what's around and who's around, like I said at the beginning. So it's like kind of fun to be like, oh, what if we just exaggerate this person's like weird characteristic here?
Right.
Or if we like kind of get this weird angle of, I know this place is always a little spooky, you know, so we can use that instead of like having to recreate a whole world. It's like, like Hall has a little bit of like a psychedelic vibe to it, because it is like there are like a lot of people, a lot of like freaky energy. I don't know if others would agree with me or if other people have said this, but it's like there's like a lot of there's a lot to work with. So I space plays in that way, because yeah, when people are willing to like go along with like your creation, your creative vision, you can really make some cool stuff. So. Mm-hmm. So this like this entry into like filmmaking has been really great, because okay, everyone wants to be in a movie, first of all, I find. I don't know. So I like when I like pitch things to people and they're like, yes, definitely, let's do it. And then you have to kind of think about all the things. It's totally different from a music project in the sense that you're like, okay, yes, everyone wants this to be really good. It's going to be like something that people see and interact with in a little bit of a different way. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of rambling now, but
no. But it sounds like a genuine and intimate way of approaching to of you know exaggerating natural elements that is already in your immediate surrounding than creating something more abstract and constructed.
Yeah, and like I have to say, like with something like a videography or like film creation, like it's kind of a hard medium that I always felt was inaccessible to me, because you need a lot of stuff. Like you're saying, like lighting and capturing sound and thinking about the camera and the editing suite and all the things that go into it. And like those things all cost money, a lot of money. And that's like something that's cool about like Diamond as like an artist run center and the gear that they have accessible to me as a member and the like expertise that they have on staff is really like helped me to like kind of figure things out on the fly and be like this like DIY scrappy artist that I am, but then also like have access to like awesome gear that I could rent and ask someone questions about and test, you know, like all these things that like to have access to that is like extremely valuable.
Yeah, the process of experimentation is not as easy to go through if you don't have that link or support just in terms of resources and equipment.
Or if you feel like you have to spend like $2,000 like right off the bat, you know, it's like that's not.
And then 2 weeks later, you realize that this is not for me, and yeah, then you're like,
well. Exactly.
But what brought you into the because you worked with video in different sorts of projects before this this horror project? In what ways has that been taking form?
Well, I got into video in the last few years because I realized that a lot of people are consuming media in form of video. And I thought that like, okay, if I want to get my work out there as a musician, like I have to make videos. And then as I began doing that, actually a friend of mine gave me a nice video camera, which was also a true blessing. And I started to video all the time. And I was like, oh, I love this. I love seeing my friends on video and my family and like just like things that you just like, you know, we're really used to our phones, which are great tools, but it's not the same as having like a high definition video of somebody just doing their thing. And then as you start to roll the camera and people get used to you being the person who always has a camera rolling and they become like their natural selves and you're like, oh, this is like magic. And I found that was like a really good way to document like processes that I was going through with friends, like mixing and collaborating and writing music and stuff, but then also like to create music videos and promo what we were doing and like really invite people into the party, which I think is like something that I like am good at, which is like, okay, we're having fun and you're a part of it via, we're going to like share video and stuff. And I think that that's like, that's why I got into video. So I mean, I ended up making a few music videos, lots for my project Chrissy that is transforming now into something different. But at the time we put out, you know, our whole set in video form at the beginning of the pandemic. And I thought that was a great way to kind of get really acquainted with like Adobe, you know, Premiere or whatever. And then also just like have our stuff like documented and out and even just for us, you know? So yeah, I got hooked. Like I fell in love with video really quickly and easily because I love every part of the process. Like the actual creating of the, like, or the taking of the video, but then also the working with it, editing it, manipulating it, all the things you can learn and the sharing of it too. And then the having it, it's really special.
I mean, it ties in again to the DIY mentality of a multidisciplinary artist to be able to do a lot of things by yourself. Mm-hmm. So I think that, yeah, that ties the cycle of being able to, yeah, continue your digital presence and all of the other reasons that you just mentioned, which also makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think that's something that's interesting for me is like, okay, yes, you want to be able to do everything yourself, but you don't want to do everything by yourself. Like, it's like, I don't know, especially as things are opening up and there's like shows happening outside and like little projects going on. And we are like, me and my friends are like, oh yeah, we really need everyone in this community to make these things work. And I think like, you know, like an artist run center like this and like Eastern Bloc as well. I think that becomes very apparent in those kinds of spaces, mm-hmm. because you're like, okay, yes, you need like the star or the person who's like creating the material, but you also need like the people who are like doing the tech and who are like thinking about the space and who are running everything else. And everyone's like equally like super important to make like a magical moment or piece or whatever it is.
Totally. But Christina, as a musician, also the wide spectrum of, you know, the studio or practicing at home on your couch or perhaps in this creative room that you have, and then performing on stage, all have, you know, totally different energies coming with them in these contexts, even if it is practicing or performing the same piece of music. But what type of space keeps the musical fire burning for you as a songwriter or performer, or whatever side that sort of continues you to inspire, continues to inspire you in continuing to create?
That's a great question also. Well, I played a show last weekend for the first time in a very long time. And, you know, all these thoughts came up because not necessarily about space, but kind of. But I was like, oh my God, I don't know how to perform anymore. You know, very like fearful, but also excited energy. And I actually performed on the baseball diamond at St. Bernadette, the park over here, because I'm also a huge baseball player and fan. I'm like kind of a rock jock. That's like my genre, I say. but I was thinking, as like, you know, DeBaser, who is a local kind of events organizer and promoter, who's amazing, offered me the show, and they said, okay, we're going to put these shows on in hall around town, and here are our locations. And I saw St. Bernadette, which I know is a baseball diamond, on the list. And I was like, oh, that's definitely, it's like my park, my garden is there, my community garden. I want to play on the baseball diamond because it's really like a space that I like feel comfortable in, but it's like kind of changing up what I would usually do there, of course, playing baseball versus playing music. But I felt really like, oh, I feel really myself right now. I'm doing like a couple things I love in a space that like I love. That is very
great.
Unique to me.
Sounds like a good way to break the ice of not having performed for a while, feeling rusty about stepping into this public space and sharing music in that way.
Totally. And having like our community kind of there, it was really cool.
That's great. Well, yeah. sounds like there's a lot of different balls to juggle, a lot of different things going on at the same time.
Yeah.
But good luck with everything moving forward. And thanks again for shining some light upon different projects and works.
Thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to hear your work as well.
My third member and guest on today's episode of Pirate Block Radio here at Daimo is longtime member Anne-Marie Dumouchel, an interdisciplinary artist with a focus on image, may it be through large-scale photography or digital rendering, challenging the connection between the physical and virtual domain by pushing the limitations of the traditional use of the camera. Thanks for taking the time in joining me today, Anne-Marie.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you today.
Great. So we've approached the topic of space from different angles in today's discussion, which seems to be having quite the importance in your practice as well, as you're exploring this relationship between the virtual and physical space. Can you talk a little bit about what it is between these two that you find particularly interesting?
Oh, that's a good question, because I'm in love with the digital space. I have a love-hate relationship with it, I should say, but it's a space I feel comfortable with. And I think a lot of people of our age are, our range of age, it becomes a second nature to be online or to work with the screens, our phones and things like that. It's such a comfortable space. So there's that, but also the fact that I realize through time that I'm not much of a maker. And I miss that. And in the history of my family, there's a lot of makers, quilt makers, bakers, or people really working with their hands. And so it's an ongoing question for me, like, how do I balance these two spaces, the physical and the virtual one? But I really feel that in my practice, all of the project I'm doing, there's this importance of extracting whatever digital images or process I'm doing into a physical one, maybe to relate it to my own body, to my own hands, to my own making in a way. So at the end, the most important thing for me is the concrete physical space that is an extension of what was digital. I think it's an act of humanizing, I believe, how I see things or how I work with things. So I think in my practice, both spaces complement each other, or one needs the other one to exist in terms of artwork, mm-hmm. but they are related and super important. Yeah.
Yeah, it can become a bit abstract only working on the two-dimensional screen that much of what we're doing, I mean, in our everyday lives in all categories are going on in that way. So,
and it's endless.
Yeah.
The thing, it's endless. And you don't see the end of something I speak of myself, but if I transform a lot of data, I transform a lot of images, I manipulate a lot of the content I'm playing with. To not extract it from this space makes it, I don't know, it doesn't make it real in a way. So, yeah, and it makes you go nuts at some point, I find. You know, there's this natural thing. You're in front of a computer or a screen. And not just that, but you work in a studio with white walls and stuff on the wall and in the basement, no windows. Anyway, that's my reality, I would say. And it makes you go nuts at some point. I think you really have to extract yourself from that. Yeah. And make things real.
Can you expand a little bit more, concretize what that means in terms of working with manipulating photography? Are you working with the digital renderings and then sort of printing that out and reworking it in ways in the physical domain before going back into the virtual? Or how does that cycle of meeting the two worlds, how does that work?
Yeah, well, for any photographic project I may have been done in the last, oh my God, I would say 6 or 7 years, are camera-less. So I do not use any cameras to make my photography project. But yet, I still consider myself as a photographer. So I use alternative methods, both in dark rooms. So I've been working with cyanotype. And cyanotype, for those who are less familiar with this process, they are chemicals that you paint or you Italy that you brush into a piece of paper, even a piece of fabric, and you actually print something on it. So whatever cyanotype images you have at the end, it's a sun print of an object. So that's a camera-less type of photography. I've been working with photograms as well in the dark room. So I love this space, the dark room itself. I use that. But in the digital space as well, I consider Photoshop a medium. So creating a pure digital image, to me, it's part of the photographic language. It's part of the photographic world. And that counts for something. And I think to go a bit more in the question you brought me, what kind of data you work with, or I appropriate a lot of images from the internet. And there are many reasons why I don't use cameras. One of these reasons is the history of photography of the medium is really related to modernism. It was a man's club for a long time. And even still today, I say that with laugh and good heart, but if you go on YouTube and you want to have a demo, it's usually the same type of man or sure. who has the money, you know, to have the perfect, great cameras. And that's great, but I do not relate to that. And I think a lot of people don't relate to that as well. Mm-hmm. And in a world where we consume images dans un rythme effréné. Sorry, I couldn't say that in English, but it's so fast. We are always overwhelmed by images in the digital world, but in the real world as well. We are bombarded with those kind of images. So I come from a point of view where I want to reuse and give new life or new meaning with what already exists. So these are some reasons why I use appropriated image. I direct search on the internet, on Google, to gather material, to welcome material. And in some project, I use these kind of images to make a project. And we can talk maybe about a specific project later, but it's one of the things I do. Mm-hmm. I love scanners very much as well.
Yeah.
To me, a scanner is not... it's not a camera, but it creates photographic images. And that's a very easy DIY technology you can have in any office. But that's a photographic mean. It does that. And there are ways for me, at least, to play with this kind of technologies of medium that are not necessarily meant to make fine art kind of images. But they mean something. And let's use these kind of things to... gather material. So my work is a lot about metamorphosis, transforming things. To me, the process of transforming existing images or any kind of material I would have gathered will come to me. Speak a lot about art being something that is alive. Artwork can have personalities. You know, us as people, as artists, we do have personalities. But I like to think as the process of an artist as something that has a life on its own. Mm-hmm. And to me, it allows me to also make art that it's not just an illustration of something, but something that is born from transformation, from metamorphosis. Something can come out just of this process itself. I think it helped me to bring down my ego as an artist sometimes, because I work with accident. I work with mistakes as well. I do embrace that in any transformative metamorphosis process that exists within my art making, my art process itself.
Well, that's a great run through of some of the different tools that you're using. And and I think what you're mentioning of transformation very much relates to the topic of space too, between the darkroom, but the scanner also being, you know, a link to in between the two different domains or the two different worlds of the digital and the physical. I mean, that's a way of transforming the work from one to the other. And with this sort of found source material that you're working with, this sort of method of collage, there's also a sense of recontextualizing, you know, pulling elements from their original intentions and natural milieus of where they've been put originally. So I'm curious to hear how the process of choosing these separate entities or these different elements that you're working with, how does that work for you when compiling a composition? What determines the choices of what you're pulling?
I love conceptual art and I love instruction. I love that very, very much. And I think this idea of instruction is recurrent from project to project. So right now I have an installation called Google Optical Spectrum. And it's, do you know about this one?
I have done a bit of research on that.
Okay, because you reacted that. And I really, really love that project because I think it illustrates my answer quite well. So the instruction was that I gave to myself is to recreate the colors within the visual spectrum. So the colors human eyes can see. So to recreate that on Google, I typed the name of colors and I took the 101st visual result without judging. And I took 1% opacity of the color that I found in the file. But the thing is it's all about welcoming the material. I know I cannot say, oh, no, I'm not going to use this file where I see a Ferrari, like a deep red. I'm not going to use that. Oh, it's a car. No, I have to take it. And I have to select what I think the deep red, let's say that's the color, is in the image. Because usually the material that comes to me, it's categorized, but it's not at the same time, because the name that the name of the color that I entered on Google is the name you probably find in the title of the file. So it could be a black and white file. It could be anything. So I'm stuck with that. So in that case, that's a decision of me trying to pick out what I think illustrate this concept in that file of the color name I'm working with. I think that's what I mean by I give space to the process to generate its own thing. And I feel more like the conductor behind this whole thing that make this project happens. But the choice, I think I really wait as much as I can in some project to make actual decision of, okay, I really need to bring myself in and try to choose what's going on in there. Because my project is about illustrating colors with the visual, with the digital digital filter in a way. So the project has been decided already and I work with this instruction. So that's a good example of how I really had to wait as much as I could to really make that decision of, okay, picking the right color in the file. But I do have other projects, for instance, where I'm scanning things. And scanning things, I mean, it could be anything. So what's the instruction? And usually whatever I'm working with in scanning projects are objects I do have in my home. And I'm really, really interested in discussing the human experience on a biological level, spiritual one, intellectual one, relational one, at the era of the screen and the digital, but from my feminine perspective. Mm-hmm. I relate to that concept very, very much. And whenever I'm scanning object for a different project, the object I'm picking are related to femininity as well. So this is another, I think, example of how I choose thing as well. So it's really thematic based like that. So I hope I answered the question.
Oh, for sure.
Okay,
absolutely.
Good.
That's
yeah. Totally, I navigated.
Totally in line. So a lot of creativity through limitations or through restrictions or boundaries that you're setting up beforehand, before sort of getting involved in the process, which, you know, I think is a very stimulating way of working. I mean, the blank page syndrome is otherwise a very apparent one when you sit down and you have limitless options.
And right now I'm trying to break that, because we made a joke early on about, oh, will lower my voice to become robotic. And I thought it was very funny, because right now in my practice, I try to break that a little bit. Working with instruction, you know, there's a beginning, there's an end. And I love that. I just adore that. And I've never understood artists who worked freely. I admire that, but I'm not sure all the time, how does that work? I have a hard time to relate to that. Just work freely, something happens. I'm a bit more control freak into my own project. But right now, it's very funny, because I find myself in a residency, and I already realized the project I submitted for that, because I wrote that project a year and a half ago. And with pandemic and things like that, I just happened to work on that. So I find myself in this amazing house right now. I'm by myself. And I'm really rethinking what I want to work for the next 3 years. I try to do a residency every 3 years, for that matter. And I think I naturally gravitate with more open-ended work. Maybe we can call that experimentation. Maybe, I don't know, I change as an artist. I'm changing my ways of working. But I'm both freaked out by it and realizing that, oh, maybe I'm broadening my own the relationship I built with my art making. Maybe it's happening, but I see it happening, making smaller project more to experiment and, you know, changing things around. But I'm very aware of that.
I mean, that's a good thing.
Was that?
Oh, that's a good thing, is what I said. I think, I mean, it sounds like an eye-opening action of widening the scope of possibilities in future projects. So, it sounds like a natural growth thing, even though it brings a bit of uncomfort when you're sort of realizing that you're on your way to something else than what you're usually.
And it's all about that too. Mm. I think the more you work, and you work on project and you have ideas, the more you have that, they evolve anyway. And yeah, it's important to be aware of that.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I do welcome that.
Another, you know, physical area that plays a significant role is the one of the space as to where the artwork or the physical images are being presented to the public. Is that something that you think of when conceiving the artwork itself? Of how the method of presentation, I mean, be it digital, or in the case of the Google Optical Spectrum, it's large scale, occupying a big room, and obviously that affects the experience as a viewer or as the public.
It's funny because it's this year, amazing opportunities happened to me in terms of presenting the work, and I've been confronted to that a lot. I think I have to go back to one of the early comments about the fact that I'm very comfortable with the screen and things like that, and that, you know, limited space that online. That's one thing, but the extraction is very important, and I'm learning more and more about how to play with an actual space. I find it intimidating very, very much. And it's very funny to say that because I work large scale and in series as well. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I'm planning, as I'm working on project, I really think about the conceptual aspect of the work. It says, how is it made of? What kind of, what's the process behind it that really led to have this piece at the end? And I really think working with the space, it's all about thinking of how is the work happening, but also how is people will experience it.
Right.
And I'm really, really learning all about that.
Reason I'm asking is, I guess this travel in between the found items and the scanned, then working in a virtual environment, and then again, you know, bringing it back into the physical space of presenting it, but now in a whole other dimension. I just find that trajectory in the way that you're talking about your work is an interesting way of different steps that that are interesting to me, looking at the way that you're working in your previous projects.
Yeah, but well, to me, the space of exposition, the exhibition space, yeah. Mm-hmm. Should be a place of love and celebration, not the work, but it's, I don't know, for people themselves. So I find myself doing space that are usually very ceremonial, very low-key, very dark, almost church-like. It's something that I realize, I tend to do these kind
you
of
gravitate
spaces.
Gravitate towards that type of,
Yeah. Mm.
Well, yeah, very interesting. I'm hoping to be able to catch one of these anytime soon, at a physical space as opposed to the limitations through digital means. But I want to thank you, Anne-Marie, for coming on and talking to me and shining some light upon some different projects and ideas.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
That was it, folks, for this episode of Pirate Block Radio here on CKUT 90.3 FM. This month being a show coming out of Gatineau, Quebec and Centre Diamond, where I've had the great pleasure to speak to artists and members Marc-Alexandre Reinhardt, Christina Bell, and last but not least, Anne-Marie Dumouchel. Diamond has a great range of resources for research creation and production in media arts for different types of projects and events, giving access to multifunctional studio spaces and a rich selection of equipment for all sorts of new media creations. So make sure to keep an eye on Diamond's website, that is daimon.qc.ca, to have a look at their upcoming programming, call for projects, residencies, and much more. And as always, I encourage you to head on over to our Mixcloud, where you type in Pirate Block Radio to listen back to some older episodes. Otherwise, I'll be back next month with a new show, same time, same place. See you then.
I said, geez, I haven't seen my friend in such a long time. Then I said, oh, you know what? You should listen to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. And then you wouldn't miss me so much.